We were at the point now where you were telling me about your decision to return to painting. This was in about
right.
1950.
Right. And I went to the Y and I enrolled in a class with Samuel Rosenberg. And this was really one of the great experiences of my life. He was a superb teacher, really superb. And I learned a great deal from him, not only about painting, though I feel that I learned everything I really know about painting, not the techniques so much, but the understanding of painting from him. And I also learned a great deal about trying to be a better human being. He had a marvelous way of being critical without hurting, and was always able to give you something constructive in his criticism. And so I began to paint again. And I took class with him, and then I went back. The teacher who had taught me in high school was a very fine watercolor painter. Her name was Jean Thoburn. And she was also teaching at the Arts and Crafts Center. And I went back and I took some watercolor work with Jean. And I learned a great deal both from her in watercolor and from the understanding of painting and the appreciation of painting from Sam Rosenberg. When I was a kid in high school, I had applied to the Associated Artists, and I had been accepted. And at the age of 16, I had been showing there. But when I became ill, and I dropped all of this, so that I reapplied now to the Associated Artists, and I was accepted, and eventually I won a prize or two, and I became... I was on the board twice, I believe, of the Associated Artists, and I was the secretary of the association. But this came much later, and I really felt, I guess I could still be there, but I really felt that I had done my stint as far as this sort of work is concerned, though I still exhibit, and I still paint. I also became quite a good, I suppose this is not too immodest, watercolor painter, and for a few years I was president of the Pittsburgh Watercolor Society, and I have judged some shows and have won quite a few prizes in watercolor work, and I've won, I guess, every prize there is to win in the city as far as watercolor is concerned. And I have shown in some national shows. And I'm still a painter. Last year I won a prize in a national watercolor show.
Feelings about Pittsburgh as a contributing community to the scene of American art in general?
Well, I can't really answer that. I don't know what they contribute to the scene of American art in general. I do feel that the art community in Pittsburgh is much too splintered. There are many factions. This is an age right now where art is a very fashionable thing, both to do and to own, to have. And therefore, there's great competition for among people selling art, and also among people producing art. And there is not much harmony between the different art factions in the city, and I think that this is reflected throughout the country. I don't think this is just Pittsburgh. This, I feel, is very much too bad. I feel that we have a very advanced art community in Pittsburgh. I feel that the work of the better artists in the city is comparable to the fine artists anywhere, including New York. And of course, they are far and far between, I meant to say, and very few. But those who are the top artists do comparable work to those who are at the top in New York and internationally. Unfortunately, the fact that they must earn a livelihood and that they have families keeps them in the city of Pittsburgh. It's fortunate for us, but I think rather unfortunate for them, because I'm a firm believer that to rise to the top, you have to be where the action is. And there's no question that New York is the art center of the world today. We have lots of mediocre work, just as there is every place else. But we do have some very fine artists. How it fits into the rest of the world, I don't know. I think I have always felt, in fact, I had written a letter at one point and received an answer from John Cannaday, who was the art critic of the New York Times, who annoyed me no end when he came to Pittsburgh and talked about the hinterlands. When I said you have to be in the center, you have to be where the action is. Unfortunately, the feeling of those critics and of those top people in the big centers is that everyone outside of those centers is a farmer, more or less. And I'm not saying this for myself.
How do you feel about yourself and the decisions that you made as far as your life with art? Obviously,
well,
it involves some compromises.
It involves a great many compromises. I do feel that had I think I have a good bit of innate talent. I think I might have really gone quite far. You don't really have to be the greatest genius in the world to go very far, but you do have to devote all of your time to it, and you have to eat it and sleep it. And I made that decision many years ago when I decided that I really wanted a husband and I really wanted a child more than I wanted a career. And so I settled for a small career, because at one point in my life I did go to New York because I had to find out whether anyone in New York thought I was any good. And I had the pleasure of finding out that they did think I was good, and I was offered a show at a very reputable gallery, which I had, and which was given to me, which cost me nothing, which of course is the proof of the pudding, because you can always buy a show in New York. And I was with that gallery for a few years, and then came the time when I had to make the decision whether I would really go to New York, stick with the gallery, and really become part of the scene. And I chose to have a husband and to raise my daughter rather than to do this. And there have been rare times when I have a feeling that I've missed something, but I think that my life has been too rich through fulfilling my place with them to really bemoan the fact that I did not leave them and pursue my own way. I don't know if you can tell from the interview, I'm a very gregarious person. I like people, and this is a very necessary part of me. And maybe I've only fooled myself into thinking that the other was what I might have wanted. But as a whole, I've been satisfied with my decision.
I'm taking a totally reverse tack now.
All right.
And sort of change the subject altogether for these last few questions, which are sort of similar. The first one being, in just a few sentences, you don't really have to go on and on. I'd like you, if you can, having lived all of your life in Pittsburgh and having a family whose history is very deeply rooted in the area, in the Pittsburgh area, to contrast for me, if you can, some broad aspects of Pittsburgh as it was, as you recall, as a child, and as it is today. And some of the areas that you might like to consider might be socially, culturally, politically, environmentally.
Well, I really can't say too much. Socially, naturally, today, distance has become very much shorter, and so that you can enlarge your friendships far beyond the area in which you live, and you can have a broader life and travel into other areas of the city more easily and so forth. And so that I think that there's that difference that has happened in 40 years. Not that we couldn't get around in that 40 years ago, but it was a lot more difficult. And I think that with the birth of the State of Israel and with the needs of the Jews in the last 40 years, growing constantly, that there has been a much more conscious effort by the Jewish community to act as a Jewish community and to support Jews over the world. I think that the greatest phenomenon that I have seen in the Jewish community is the fact that it has become, from being a very unfashionable thing, a very fashionable thing to understand Yiddish and Hebrew and to be a contributor both of time and effort and of money to the welfare of Jews. This was, when I was a child, this was mostly for the immigrant who had her little box, and you gave a little money to the temple that you supported, and that was it. Today, it is the fashionable thing to participate in supporting Jews in Israel and around the world, and this is one of the wonderful things that has happened from the horrors of Hitler Germany, and also, of course, of the birth of the State of Israel. What else did you ask me? Other changes? Politically?
Mm-hmm.
Politically, I think I have seen the groups that I know, though my husband and I were always connected to a more liberal political point of view, I have seen more and more of our friends turn to a more liberal point of view.
What about environmental? I've seen photographs Pittsburgh in midday when it was so black.
Right, of course,
down the street.
Right, of course, it's a much cleaner city now. I remember thinking how clean New York was when I went there as a child compared to the filth of Pittsburgh. And now Pittsburgh is so much cleaner than almost any city we go into that there has been a tremendous change in the city of Pittsburgh. Smoke control has done great things. And, of course, there have been other factions at work, too.
Is there any other information that comes to your mind that we might not have touched on or that you would like to add to that we've already talked about?
No, I don't believe that there is. The main things as I look back over the past 40 years is that one of the things I like to say is how good this country has been and how good the city of Pittsburgh has been for us, and how lucky we are as Jews that we are here. And I think one of the, I did speak about, but I feel very deeply about the fact that it has become so fashionable to be Jewish conscious and involved with Jews. And this is, I think, a marvelous thing that has happened. And I can't stress this deeply enough. I can remember when I was working in the United Jewish Federation, how we would sit for hours wondering how we could possibly get some of the young women who had means to become interested in the Federation. And at that time, some of them were even members for the Council for Judaism, which was a very bigoted organization. And
tell me a little more about that.
About the Council for Judaism? This was a very fashionable group of people. These were a group of wealthy Jewish families who were embarrassed, who had, I suppose, for the most part, the same kind of background that I had had, where they really knew very little about Orthodoxy and about Jews other than themselves. They were extremely Reformed Jews. And the very idea that the State of Israel was forming and had really formed right at this time that I'm talking about was an extreme embarrassment to them. And they formed an organization called the Council for Judaism. Now, these facts may not all be accurate, but the feeling that I'm giving you is accurate. And at every turn, they were very vocal. And at every turn where there was a plea to Jews to support something, a public plea, they also put their 2 cents worth in to counteract whatever it was that the rest of the Jewish community was speaking for. And as I say, they were a great embarrassment to most of us who supported Israel and who understood what was happening. And this organization, I don't know whether it even still exists today, but gradually it was ground down into the dust where it belonged, in my opinion. Another thing that I didn't mention in...
Give me an approximate time for this. Are we talking the era of the Second World War, past that time?
We're talking around the, I think we're talking, I'm not sure of this, Jane. I think we're talking about from like the mid-40s to the mid-50s, somewhere in there. I think this is where we're talking. And there is a very important part of our lives that I've left out of this entire interview, and that was the political activity in which we participated during, at the time of McCarthy. Your father and I were never communists. We never joined the Communist Party, but we were always on that sort of pink fringe that supported very liberal causes. And this was a a source of embarrassment to some of our family and some of our friends, the fact that we went to rallies and that we supported the very liberal candidates. And I don't know if I have time on this interview. We had a very interesting experience in our family. I mentioned earlier that my mother had one brother who was the head of the chemistry department at the University of Pittsburgh. He was overjoyed at one point in his career to receive a letter from the United States government and from the president asking him to be a part of the Atomic Energy Commission. Of course, he would have to be cleared to take this position. And, of course, there was just no question in our minds that he would be cleared because he had never had any political interest whatsoever. He was quite a staunch Republican and very reactionary in his views and really knew very little about politics altogether. And to our amazement, he was not cleared, and he was accused at that time of being a member of the Communist Party. And he engaged one of the biggest attorneys in the city of Pittsburgh, a woman by the name of Ella Graubert, and she defended him in his appeal. And I think that's the wrong terminology that I'm using. She represented him in his appeal to the Atomic Energy Commission. And there was witness after witness, including Rabbi Friedhoff, including the head of the university and so forth. My aunt, Florence Reisenstein, who was a very ardent Democrat and liberal, and I and my husband, who were also very liberal in our leanings, could never really believe what was happening. Had this happened to any of the three of us, we could have understood it, but we could not understand it with my uncle, Dr. Silverman. At any rate, he was cleared of all charges, but never appointed to the commission because he had been smeared by this filth of the McCarthy age. Is that all? It seems like a...